Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Watch Matt Bowen. Bowen's a tough guy.
Matt Bowen.
And it's intercepted by Matt Bowen.
Miller, ton of time. But the coverage is good with Matt Bowen.
7-year NFL veteran.
Blitz coming from Bowen, and he knocks it out. The Redskins fall on top of it.
Matt Bowen's been the guy applying all the pressure.
Coach for IC Catholic football.
Matt Bowen, man from Glen Ellyn, Illinois. He's very active.
NFL writer and analyst for ESPN.
Sometimes you have to build up a player more often than others, correct? You have to have more conversations with them. You have to be more encouraging. You have to create more excitement on the average plays at times to get them going mentally and to build a bridge for them to be more productive. And you're seeing that with Stevenson.
It felt good because last week just showed me I need to hone in on the small details and stay consistent at everything that I do.
Geno Smith going to run for it, and he's picked again. Tyreek Stevenson.
Matt Bowen.
I have a simple rule with beer. I only drink beer that you can buy in 30 packs. So that, I'll leave you with that.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
It's great to talk ball with Matt Bowen. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Matt, as always, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. News out of Halas Hall today. Kyler Gordon says that he is back. No pump fakes. He will play Monday night for the Bears against the Commanders. What does a player like him, what is he capable of doing in a defense like Dennis Allen's?
Well, you have to have a slot corner. It's one of the most important positions in football today, Lawrence. Someone can cut off the ball in the run game, match and carry inside, pressure, tackle in space, and also play man coverage in third and short. You have to have that player in your defense, and especially someone like Gordon, who has the transition speed, is physical in coverage, and physical at the point of attack. It improves your defense dramatically when he's in the football field. And going against Washington, I wouldn't be surprised if he's matched up versus Deebo Samuel on third down.
Woo, boy. That just got the football brain going. Deebo's a beast, isn't he, Matt? Like that, his hands are so crazy strong. He can do anything fundamentally he needs to do. He's a great player.
Yeah, and he can play through contact. That's the most important thing. Similar to an A.J. Brown, someone that can play through press coverage, win at the top of the route stem because they are so physical and create separation that way. You don't want to be, you know, a Keenan Allen, a super detailed route runner when you have those physical tools that Deebo Samuel has when you watch him on tape. More importantly, in Cliff Kingsbury's offense, he is that motion movement player. That's a term I use for someone who obviously can win within the route tree, but also on fly sweeps, screens, backfield alignments, manufactured touches for him. So that's someone they really have to account for on Monday night.
When you're looking around the league, Matt, do you see the nickel being as important as you're describing? Are there more teams playing just two linebackers in their base and letting that nickel just run?
That's what I would do. If you have a physical slot corner, speed, because if you do get a lot of 12 personnel, two tight ends, someone who can flex outside, you need to have that physicality to match up versus the tight end in space. And if you have that, I love being in sub package. I think it's the best thing to be in right now because it allows you to disguise more, too. When you have multiple defensive backs in the field who are versatile, that can drop to a hook curl, that can match and carry, that can drop to a deep half if they need to be with an invert cover two look, it gives you more opportunity to change the picture post-snap.
Matt, what does the tape say that Jaden Daniels is now in year two? And I get that he was hurt for a couple of weeks,
right.
but what are you seeing so far from him that either proves that last year wasn't a fluke or proves some evolvement by him as a quarterback?
Right. I still think he has excellent poise in the pocket. That's the thing you saw at LSU. You saw it in his first year in the league, and you're seeing it again this year. Well, Jaden Daniels can make plays out of structure. He can carry the ball and design concepts as a runner. More importantly, he can throw from the pocket. He plays with excellent poise in the pocket. I love his pocket movement. I think that has really separated him and that rookie class of quarterbacks because of how advanced he is as a thrower, how advanced his eyes are. And obviously, you mentioned the injury. You know, that's part of football, but he's back, and you're not going to really look at his first game back against a tough Chargers defense and deal in absolutes. You look at the total picture of what he is, and that's a challenge for Dennis Allen, this defense, because he can beat you so many different ways.
God, that's the first time I've thought about the Jaden or Caleb thing in a while. Maybe because all the baseball's been going on, and just here we are. It's game week now. It's Tuesday of a game on Monday. And if you had to answer, if Jaden had Shane Waldron in that mess last year and had Ben Johnson and this force feeding this year, you know, who's ahead of who at this point?
That's a great question. It's hard to speculate on that, but he wouldn't be at the same level, I don't think. You know, coaching matters. We've talked about that all season, guys. It matters a lot. And look at the stability Dan Quinn brought to Washington last year and what he did with that football team. I think they overachieved. It's not that they don't have talent, but they won games in the playoffs. And they played really good football with a young quarterback. Cliff Kingsbury matters there as well. So you look at the coaching he got in Washington, he landed in a great situation, a great opportunity, where Caleb did not. And now Caleb is trying to press time and make up for lost time of last year. Not that he didn't learn last year. I'm not saying that at all. But he didn't learn to the degree and have the success that Jaden Daniels did as a rookie. So he's trying to catch up to where Daniels is at right now.
What do you think of the change that was made at left tackle?
I think it had to be done. I mean, remember when we talked earlier in the season, I said Braxton Jones was a league average starter. I still agree with that. I don't think it's good enough. I simply don't. Because right now, it's one thing to talk about pass protection. It's another thing to talk about the run game. Right now, the Bears' run game, they got to find the run game. DeAndre Swift is averaging 3.3 yards per carry. That's simply not good enough, guys. We know that. You talk about balance in Ben Johnson's offense. Right now, there is no balance. If you're not efficient running the football, you can't create tempo to the run game. I think DeAndre Swift only has 5 carries of 10 or more yards. They're not explosive on the ground. That has to change. So if you think a change to left tackle can boost your run game, you got to do it. And especially now is the right time, over a bye week, when you can get more reps and get ready for a football game.
Okay, so if you're Washington, you look out there and you go, oh, it's Theo Benedict. He's playing left tackle for the Bears. How would you expect that they will try to attack him?
I think they'll try to get linebackers on him in pass rush situations. Look at Dan Quinn's defense, what they do. A lot of loaded fronts, a lot of movement at the second level. A guy like Frankie Louvel at linebacker who can match up versus guards and tackles as a pass rusher. I think you'll see some of that to try to get him in space and force him to redirect versus a smaller athlete at the point of attack. And that's what I would do to him as well.
You got me thinking about this run game and how different it could conceivably look coming out of the bye. I got a lot of respect for Ben Johnson and the offensive staff in terms of being able to do a lot of different things. Like, we've seen it. We've seen a lot under center. We've seen a lot of shotgun. We've seen two backs. We've seen the H-back back there. We've seen a lot of different stuff. So I wonder what they will choose kind of schematically or with usage and personnel. I wonder what they think works the best so far and what we're going to see, Matt.
It's a great question, and I'm excited to see it coming out of the bye week. You know, Ben Johnson and the staff have been in office for 2 weeks. Right, if you count last week and this game week coming up. So what is the new install? That's what you're always looking for. What is the new install? Is there, to your point, Speaks, a way to create run game production with different personnel, different alignment on the field? Or do they just get back to basics and say, we have to run, you know, outside zone or wide zone. We have to do it better. It could be as simple as that. What can we do to make that play go? That is a core foundational run concept under Ben Johnson. What can we do as a coaching staff, whether it's, you know, working out of 12, working out of 11 personnel, working out of trips, working out of stack motion, whatever it may be, how do we make this play go? And that's what I'm excited to see.
Yeah, you know, because it might just be that with the new left tackle, you're like, we could just actually do the things what we thought we were going to do.
Right.
And let's try and do them. He's not going to give up on it, Matt, though. I loved at the end of that Raiders game, he kept running, and they succeeded in the red zone running, even though it really hadn't worked much during the game.
No, and you have to. You can't. I mean, it's hard, Speaks, at any level, just say, well, let's just drop back and throw the ball 65 times. You know, and I look, I played for Coach Spurrier in Washington. We tried that multiple times. It did not work. It did not work. But, you know, when you think about football, right, and everyone always says it's a passing league, I agree with that. But you look around the league and how much balance there really is and how important the run game is to build into your pass game. You got to have a sense of a run game. And also late in a football game, that's how you're wearing a defense down. You don't wear a defense down throwing seam routes. I'll tell you that right now. You do not. You're giving them a break. You wear them down by running the football right at them and moving them off the line of scrimmage. The Bears have to be better.
This may be recency bias, but you're someone who played special teams. I feel like every week I'm seeing a spectacular special teams play. Is something going on that that us regular humans are missing out on?
No, I think, well, the change to the kickoff rule is great for football because now we have returns again. The last couple of years, I mean, that you don't even need to watch that play, right? They just kick it out of the end zone, you go on, play offense. But now there's actual returns. And obviously it's different because of the alignment and how it's different from the college and high school level. Now, we understand that, but you're getting a play there. You're getting a chance for an exciting play. You're also furthering the career for special teams guys because they're much more important now because they have to tackle on kickoff. But what the thing that looks negative right now, Lawrence, is the blocks. You know, the blocked field goals, the blocked punts. And there can be multiple reasons for that. If I had to speculate on that, is again to what we've talked about before, lack of training camp time, lack of special team sessions, lack of live special team sessions. I mean, if you want to practice punt protection, you have to go live. You can't go through at a walkthrough. It doesn't work. You're wasting your time. You have to go live in full pads and tell your punter, watch out, because we're coming after you in practice, but we have to do this to get ready for a football game.
I got to tell you, as a viewer and a consumer, I love all the blocks. It's fun as hell. And especially maybe because with the new kicker footballs, like everybody's good from 55, you know? So
I was just talking about that the other day, Speaks. Like when I played, the line was really the 30. If you're playing defense, if you can hold them, you know, to the 35, 38, they're probably going to punt. It's not even close now. It's not even close. You got to understand, when I played, okay, so this used to bother me a little bit. So at training camp at night, you had 2 days during the day. You had a lifting session. You just wanted to go to bed. And you had meetings at night till like 11 o'clock. Well, the kickers would go to the golf range. They go to the movies, you know, and that's just, they come back from the movies. Like, it was nothing. But I think the training has, you know, the modern athlete is so different than when I played. So different than when I played. That the leg drive of these kickers, the athleticism of these kickers, the absolute foundational core power they have in their bodies is so different right now that the line you have to protect on defense is really the 40 or 42. That's hard to do. That's really hard to do.
I would love to know what some of the movies the kickers went to go see.
Look, we have access to someone who did this with Manley.
Manley?
The Manley, yeah. Maynard, and Gold.
Maynard and Gold.
They'd be gone.
Maynard and Gold.
Like, you'd see other guys around campus, and those three dudes would be at I think it's Bon Vivant. Yeah. I think that's the golf course in Bourbonnais.
Well, what years are we talking? Yeah. I want to check the movies. Like, you know, they come back, and they're like, oh, man, so saw this new movie. It was really good. What year?
And they say that, like, yeah, I was in the defensive back meeting for 2 hours.
So, Matt, before we let you go, you played in Washington. You brought up your years with Spurrier. What's it like for you to see Washington football being spoken about with, like, a hopeful tone?
It reminds me of when Coach Gibbs came back. When Joe Gibbs came back to coach us and that would be, what, 2004, he came back with Greg Williams or D.C. Everything changed. Just the discipline of the entire building changed because you had an absolute leader in there. And I think Joe Gibbs is one of the greatest football coaches ever, considering what he did in Washington, winning three different Super Bowls with three different starting quarterbacks. Very hard to do. But just the way he was as a teacher and a coach and a disciplinarian, it reminds me of that when you have a leader. And I've said before, you have an owner, you have a general manager. The head coach, in my opinion, needs to be the most important person in that building. It has to be that way. I think you have that in Washington right now with Dan Quinn.
Matt, as always, we appreciate you. Have fun on the practice field.
So if I told you, that Brett Conway and Brian Barker on the 2002 Washington team went to go see My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
They probably did.
Yeah.
And I was in there getting yelled at by, D.C. Yeah, it was awesome.
See you, Matt.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding is great. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Character wins right there. Yeah. And it took all 60 minutes.
Yes, sir.
And you know what it took? It took belief.
Yes, sir.
It took belief
that
we were going to find a way.
Yes, sir.
Because at the end of the day, gentlemen, that was two teams that were f***ing desperate.
Yes, sir.
Both teams. I give them a lot of credit, man. But you know who wanted just a little bit more? Chicago Bears. Yes, sir.
That was Ben Johnson speaking to his team after they beat the Raiders. Do you remember that? That happened. It's been a while since then. We've had a lot go on. Like, for example, the Cubs won the wild card series. This is Raheemy Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. Mark is at Hallis Hall. He'll join us with the latest from the Bears at 1 o'clock. And in the meantime, we're in that middle time. It's not quite turn the page. It's not quite the bye week is over yet. So you're trying to figure out evaluation-wise, which is exactly what the team told us they would do. What about the Bears needs to improve the most between that Raiders game and the Monday night game against Washington? Two things come to mind for me. It's pretty obvious. It's the running game offensively, and then also the run defense. The run defense has to be tighter if the Bears want to make sure that they can still be competitive from here on out, I think, in games. Because as you mentioned, and we mentioned yesterday when we went around the NFL, Marshall, the man known as Bill, Jacory Kroski-Merritt, had a nice game for the Commanders. And I feel like that's the reason they were able to be competitive and win the game against the Chargers. Like, that running game helps them and that passing attack from Jaden Daniels.
I think you're absolutely right when you talk about what needs to improve. But I have a one-word answer for that.
Yes.
Health. Just health. Just like that first injury report, you know what I need to see?
The opposite of the Ravens injury report from last week.
Yes, we can start
there.
That
was horrifying. If you saw that injury report, you know exactly why they ended up losing the way they did to the Texans.
The print was so fine and small to get all those players on the little graphic for the Ravens. I felt bad for the Ravens, honestly. But I need to see TJ Edwards, Grady Jarrett, Kyler Gordon, Colston Loveland, I need to see them all good to go. Good to go. Like, full. Practice,
TJ Edwards is a big concern to me.
Tell me why. Because it's the hamstring?
Because we know from having him on all last year, for example, as a guest, you know he's doing everything he can to get back on the field. But the hamstring being this damning for this much time. In fact, I think it was Brad Biggs who pointed it out originally, like before the season began. Brad Biggs said, this is probably something that's going to take some time. And it has. I think this defense looks a lot different with TJ Edwards on it. I hate that it would come down to one person making such a difference in that way. But I worry about the overall health of this. Like, what if he's not ready against the Commanders? Do you then become concerned as to how severe this thing is?
Yes, I'm already concerned about how severe it is. The man hasn't been practicing. So you would think 2 weeks off, plus they get the extra day because it's Monday Night Football, would put them in position to get him back. And if not now, then you start asking, well, when would he be ready? And that's the same for Kyler Gordon as well.
Yeah. And I am more concerned now about the soft tissue injury simply because I'm more acute to it and keen to it based on what we saw happen with Jalen Johnson. Like, that's a big deal. And so you want to make sure that you do everything you can to figure out the actual health of these players. And if they do need a little more time, this is the season where you're allowed to take that risk, I think. Like, give them a little more time and it's not hurting you as much. It's not like we outright expect this team to make a playoff run, for example. You're not in the situation of the Chiefs. You're not the Ravens.
Let me tell you something. If the Bears do beat the Commanders, I fully expect them to make a run towards the playoffs. I don't know if they're going to get there, but it feels like the point in the season where if you win this game against what appears to be a healthy Jaden Daniels and company on the road, especially after how that game went last year, it feels like this could be a big just flashpoint for the Bears as a young, up-and-coming, with a first-year head coach team.
For me, outside, I'm not going to make any predictions yet because I just don't want to.
That's fair.
For me, it comes to the rushing yards per game problem. This is a problem for this team. They're next to last in rushing yards allowed per game in the NFL, and I know that they've got one fewer game now with the league because of the bye week, but they're giving up 164.5 yards per game.
Is that a lot?
You think Bill's not going to eat that up? Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt had 111 yards, as we mentioned, on 14 carries. That was 7.9 yards a carry. And if that is significant enough, think about the Lions' yards per play and how they were able to rattle off over 8. What was it, 8.8, I believe?
Large number, yeah.
Yeah, almost 9. So the chunk plays, those explosives that we talk about, you absolutely don't want them coming in the run game like this. And that speaks to the defensive line as well. We were trying to figure this out, and Ray did the best he could, about per position group where the Bears were in spending. And you know it's a lot on that defensive line. Well, we know that they have the fifth highest defensive payroll in the NFL. Fifth highest defensive payroll. And as of last week, they were either third or fourth from the bottom in sacks.
The fact that they give up more yards per carry, I am concerned about the rushing yards per game. I don't want to mischaracterize.
You know who's last, right? Did I say who was last?
No, who's last?
Dolphins.
Dolphins.
Does that make you more worried now?
No. I'm saying I look at yards per carry because it's just like, let's get down to it. How many yards are you giving up per attempt? That's dead last at 6.2. And it's not just 6.2, but it's 0.6 yards ahead of anybody else.
So not only can you fall forward, but you can take a few steps and then fall forward.
Yes. Yes. And I think with the Bears specifically, we've been kind of conditioned because of the way the season has gone to say, oh, well, you know, it's early. They'll figure that out. Oh, guys are hurt when they come back. What if they come back and they're still giving up, you know, over 5 yards per carry? Then you have a serious, serious problem.
Well, I mean, you also have the blueprint for how every team should beat you. Just hand the ball off.
The Raiders probably could have beaten them if they had just
stuck to the run game.
Yes.
Dare I say the Cowboys as well?
Listen, Javonte Williams looked pretty good against the Bears. Ashton Jeanty, oh, that's the game he actually got off out of all the games that he's played. So,
Texter has a good point here.
What's that?
847, JCM, my guy. Just remember, he was on the board when Poles took Manungai. 630, do the Bears have any new running backs? No. Damn, okay.
The only thing I'll say to that, and I get the Kyle Manungai point, I really do, seventh round picks, is they haven't been blocking very well for anybody as far as run blocking. That offensive unit, you hope that this break, reset, whatever you want to call it, with some veteran guys, and also the now addition of what? Theo Benedet on one side, and Darnell Wright hopefully coming back healthy, that has them what they want to have and where they want to be.
Well, that's why we're asking the question, what aspect of the Bears do you need to see improve the most during this bye week? For me, it's run defense is one. I think run game is 1A. I still don't know how they set up their offense in a way that makes it all make sense and establish a rhythm if they don't. establish that running game more?
Trenches. It comes down to the I hate how when you analyze the Bears and what you've seen so far and what needs to improve, it's almost like we're talking about very basic football. It's not a complex thing we're talking about.
Also, 630 says, go check the league leaders in sacks and see how far down you have to scroll to find a Bears player. It's hilarious. Oh, it is. And you know what else? Do you know who spent the least amount of money out of all the teams on defense? The Lions. Do you know that after the Bears played their last game, after that last week in the NFL, the week with the Raiders game, do you know who was at the top in sacks? The Lions.
That's quite damning, the information you have presented me. What did he say under his breath?
It was just the Robbie evil Detroit laugh right here.
Man, Robbie, if you don't go on somewhere that...
But if that... And let's face it, a lot of that is Aiden Hutchinson on a rookie contract, is it not? Like, that's exactly how that translates. But it's not good when you're paying that much money to people who are not producing. We just talked about it with playoff baseball. We should absolutely be able to talk about it with NFL veterans.
So, your guy to know, I guess, is... Is he the leader? Hold on. With one sack? Tied for 90th?
No.
Who's the leader?
On the Bears?
Yeah. I'm...
They have one guy with at least two, don't they?
The way you said that just now? The way you just said that? Maybe they do. Maybe somebody's got one and a half.
Man, no, they don't.
To know Passingo is the leader?
There's five total. Montez Sweat has a sack. Dio Dangbo has a sack. Dominique Robinson, Jervon Dexter, Tano Passanio.
So,
and that's it. That's your five sacks.
So they're tied. Oh, my goodness. So basically,
it's October 7th.
It's 193. It's a nine. Oh, my goodness. This is bad. It's a 103 player tie for 90th place in the league.
With one?
Yes, with one. And then it goes.
All right, everybody.
They're all tied for 90th. The 190. I'm sorry, the 93 players are tied for 90th. I'm sorry, 101 players are tied for 90th. 103 players are tied for 90th. Then the next person is 194 with a half a sack.
Who's that? Who's 194?
Well, it's a bunch of guys. It's. I'm going to tell you how many. Well, I can't tell you.
A bunch of guys or one guy? If this is making less sense as it goes on, that's kind of our point here. The bottom line is you guys need more sacks.
28
we need
guys,
more sacks.
28 guys half a sack are tied for that 194
sack
spot.
Machine.
All right. So we know that the Bears have five dudes better than the dudes with a half a sack. That's what we've come up with?
That's the truth. Yes. They have double as many as the half a sack because they have a hole.
Oh, my gosh. This can't be the measurement.
So
it sounds so bad.
Like, if they could stop the run, the next thing for me would be get to the quarterback.
Oh, my gosh. There are teams with 20. The Broncos have 21 sacks as a team.
Where do the Bears rank?
The Lions have 16, by the way.
Where do the Bears rank, Layla?
Well, right. I mean, it's really bad now. They're last because they had the bye week. The Carolina Panthers, the Niners, and the Ravens. Guys, what's happened to the Ravens defense? My word.
Everybody's hurt. Everybody is hurt.
So, yeah. So, we focused on D-line and also running back situation.
This is bad. This is just... It has to be fixed before they take on Jaden Daniels. Because if he can run and he's not going to get sacked...
And he can hand the ball off to somebody who can also run.
What does that mean?
That means offense. That means they score points.
I'll be taking the over... I'm just letting you know off the top. I'll be taking the over. No prediction, just that I'll be taking the over. That is my prediction.
You know who's fourth in sacks? The Commanders. Well, technically they're tied for third with the Rams. They both have 15 as a team.
I think the Bears can keep Caleb up, right? They only give up one sack to the Raiders, right?
Yeah, because he flushed out of the pocket and threw the ball away quite a bit.
Caleb can move. Listen, if there's one guy I know who will have a chip on his shoulder for this game, it will be Caleb Williams.
And you know what? The best way to A, avoid sack, and B, run the ball when you're... C, running backs don't always work. It might just be zone read.
that could work. And they have time to like throw some wrinkles in there.
They run some defined zone read plays. I've seen them with my own eyes.
I'm interested to see what Ben Johnson cooks up with 2 weeks to prepare. I'm sorry, 2 weeks and 1 day to prepare.
When Caleb Williams talked about growing in leadership, is he just answering the question with empty rhetoric, or do you really buy into what he's saying?
You know, myself, it goes back to the basics of being able to look at what I need to look at. It always starts ground up. So looking at, you know, my base and looking at my, you know, my footwork and, you know, the confidence of being able to get the calls out and, you know, long calls, short calls, whatever, being able to get the guys up to the line and you know, make the checks and things like that. So it always starts with those base things. And then from there you grow and, you know, you figure out, you know, you need to be set here to get back to here and all, you know, all of those different things. So it always starts with the basics and then you can, you know, take steps from there.
All right. Your reaction to what you heard there from QB1.
I think the guy is a bright guy who can take coaching. I think that's exactly what they've told him. I think they've repeated that. And I think he's believes it. He's coming back with it. I don't think he's posing in any way there. I think he's talking about his own game and you know, his vision of being a leader isn't kind of getting on guys' rear ends and yelling at people. It's more performing the way he's supposed to perform and doing exactly what it's more of a leading by example. And I think that as his career goes on, you know, we've talked about this already. He has this special element where it slows down and he can do things at the end of games that maybe he wasn't doing the whole game through. But I think this applies here as well. I think that as he has more bigger moments, he's going to grow as a leader. As he becomes a better quarterback, his leadership will be more appreciated. And he's right. I think, again, that's something he's been trained and told and working on. And that's what he comes back and kind of mimics to you when he's asked that question. It's a good answer.
It's a good answer. It was a good question. I think this is, you're seeing the maturation process. You're also seeing a relationship between the head coach, the play caller, and the quarterback. And the head coach, the play caller are the same person. I think he's showing him, look, if you do this, if you do the basics, look at what can happen. And I think that's the biggest thing here, what's going on. I think he has bought in. He said that he was looking to be coached, and, you know, that kind of got an eye roll from me, shocking, when I first heard it, that he was looking to be coached. He was looking to be told what to do. He was looking for that. But I think he was being honest, and he's seeing it, and we're getting a growing process, a maturation process.
Two things that were said yesterday make me agree with that. I think you're right. And you hear it more the more you listen to Caleb Williams closely. The first thing is, beyond the answer, which I thought was revealing, he also shared that his off week he spent at home with his dog, cooking food, doing nothing, probably studying, probably relaxing. He wasn't, oh, I just got back from Italy. Oh, I just got back from LA. Oh, I just got back from insert whatever city here because I was out and living my glamorous lifestyle. No, he created the image that he stayed home to rest physically and mentally to prepare for 13 straight weeks of football. And that sounded like exactly what Ben Johnson would want him to say. The other thing you heard was Ben Johnson, in a question about the 2024 draft class of quarterbacks, use that as an opportunity to remind people and to reestablish what he loves about Caleb Williams, why he came to Chicago, and how Caleb played a big role in that, and how that elite arm talent is something he still has. So I felt like it was a very significant day at the podium at Halas Hall because of what Caleb Williams said about leadership and how he spent his off week, and what Ben Johnson did in turning a question about the draft class into a full-throated endorsement for his young quarterback.
I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Voice of Brad Biggs, Biggs Time, 8:25 today. Tyreek Stevenson continues to tell anyone and everyone how he's growing since last year's Fail Mary when he taunted the Commanders crowd. Are you buying it? What do you think he's taking so much about what he did and had to overcome? Is he building confidence or is he building doubt?
I think he wants to speak it into existence. Like, I'm a different player. I'm a different guy. I'm a different pro. And coming into the season, I had doubts. I had doubts just based on talking to people who had been around Tyreek Stevenson and knowing how difficult at times he could be to coach and how shaky he had been in terms of being professional and dependable and reliable. In an odd way, you'd never want your team to be compromised by injury. But in an odd way, Jalen Johnson's injury has brought out the best in Tyreek Stevenson. And it has forced him to grow up even quicker and to get over this blemish in his past. He's addressed it. I am impressed. I think he's also made himself a bigger target. If I'm Cliff Kingsbury, I'm gonna test his mettle immediately, early and often. Debo, go. Terry, go. If those are the guys, I think that you're going to challenge Tyreek Stevenson and see if he is as good on the field as he has been talking off of it.
It's a really good way to break it down there, David. And the other part, just adding on, talked about that he's going to have to and knows he's going to tell his son about this. He's going to tell his son this story one day. Yesterday, I think it was yesterday. It's kind of a blur right now this week. That he should be the captain with the guys. Every week they pick a guy to be a captain, and I think maybe this is the week to have him do that. I think that would be cool. Speaking it into existence, yes, I do think they will test him too. I agree with everything that was said, and I am a prisoner of the moment, and I'm sure if we rewound the tape that on the Monday after this had happened, I'm sure I said they should have cut this guy immediately. Right? I mean, it basically almost had like no punishment. David raising his hand, maybe he was there too. But I mean, right now, thank goodness they didn't. I mean, maybe they could have done something in free agency or the draft, right? But I mean, they obviously need him. But in the moment, I believed I probably pulled Mully's story about Jimmy Johnson. I said they should have Jimmy Johnson the guy and left him in the nation's capital, and he could have hung out and gotten his way back to Chicago, however he had to do it.
I think there's a lot here, and I'm going to say this, and I hope it doesn't come across the wrong way, but I think that there has been a lot of talk about people suffering mental health issues and how you work out things and what you go through when you have problems in your life. One of the things that you do when you go into any kind of counseling is you talk over things. And you talk about it, and you get into this mode of talking about things. And I've got friends that have been through some very bad times and have needed help and have gotten help. And I have found that my conversations with them, it's almost like a continuation of whatever process they're going to, where they're more open and they're more willing to discuss different things because they understand that it helps them get through it. I think he's gotten help. And I think that as a result of that, he doesn't have any problem kind of confronting it, talking about it. He's open about it. He's willing to discuss it. At times it has appeared this week as if he's rushing to talk about it. He's very happy to talk about
it. He's looking for opportunities to share what he's been through.
And that is a sign of maturity.
That is.
And
it
is a sign of growth. And I think that he's gotten help. He's getting better. And he's talking about it. I know that sounds like I'm being dismissive of it somehow. I'm not.
I don't think you're being dismissive of it at all. I think what you're talking about, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but somebody in his life, whether it's his process, is trying to look at this and ask him to view it this way. This negative could end up being a positive for you. If you learn how to grow from it, you're going to be better for it, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what he's saying, essentially?
Yes. Like, he's not shamed by anything that has happened with him, and he's willing to discuss it and to be open about it to help other people that go through stuff like this. It's a positive thing. I like it.
It's what
He's become a significantly better player. I feel differently about him as a player.
Well, I think because we've seen him play.
Because he's played better.
He's played at a high level.
But I like that he's willing to not shy away from this.
I do too. I think we're both probably, I don't want to say guilty of is the wrong way to put it, but you understand he's produced. So you want to hear what he has to say. If he were a guy that was struggling mightily, and after four games, he quarterback still had a perfect passer rating every time they targeted Tyrique Stevenson, I'm not sure you'd want to hear as much. But what he's done is he turned the season around because you feel like he's committed to improvement, and you respect guys like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And I hope that it continues because he's got the talent to be a cornerback that is good enough to go up against some of the best receivers on the schedule. And he's going to have to be that guy if the Bears defense is going to be any good.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Wiederer.
I mean, the dude is a tone setter, and that's undeniable. And I don't even think Ryan Poles and anyone in that front office would deny that.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Hey, listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down, baby.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to our friend Dan Wiederer with The Athletic. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Dan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you fellas today?
Oh, we're getting ready for the big revisit to Washington. The big.
Oh, yeah.
Don't bring it up. The big place. We go back to where they faced one of the real bad games in the last 10 years, 20 years.
The haunted house.
It's a haunted house because it ruined your season. That game ruined their season. It almost ruined Tyrique Stevenson's career. He seems more than happy to talk about it. What was your take on the way the head coach did not really want to get into a different team, different year?
Well, yeah, and Ben didn't experience any of it, so there's really no benefit for him in trying to go back down that road and put himself in that haunted house and freak himself out. He has to look at a football team that he rode a pretty significant roller coaster in September. He's got a lot of things to clean up if they're going to compete against some of the better teams in the conference and in the league. And so they've got some pretty serious business this week in putting together a winning game plan for the Commanders. I'm sure it's in the back of the minds of several of these players in the locker room, but it is a new team. It is a new season, and they have to try to go and exercise some demons.
Dan, terrific story in The Athletic about the Tyrique Stevenson experience from last year's Fail Mary through getting ready for Monday Night Football this season. You talk to people in Tyrique Stevenson's inner circle and how he called his coach and mentor from the locker room that night, it appears. What was your biggest thing you took away from writing this story, talking to Tyrique and people around him, and how ready he is for this moment?
I think that there is almost a refreshing self-awareness to Tyrique in terms of his own acknowledgement of the flaws in his personality and in his football skill set that he's really got to dial in on and improve, right? And he's at a pivotal point in his football life here. This is a very important season for him, not just for this year, but for his life, right? And trying to set himself up for a second contract that could be life changing, and for trying to make sure that the Hail Mary blunder from last year isn't the one thing that he's defined by, right? That there's more to his career and there's more ahead of him. And so, look, I have no idea whether Tyreek's going to be able to clear some of the hurdles that are there for him to get past that nightmare and take his career to the next level. But I do know that he is interested in trying, and he's trying to be receptive to everyone around him that gives him constructive criticism. And so now we kind of watch from the sidelines to see if he can find ways to channel his passion productively, and then to find that level of focus and concentration that coaches have been begging him to find since he was younger.
He's one of the real success stories of this season. I mean, he was in a way kind of lucky to make the team. And you look at where he's at now, they need him. I mean, they need him as much as they need anybody on this team. Mm-hmm. He is an important figure in what they want to do moving forward. And I'm not sure that I believe that was going to wind up being the case when the season started.
I think he's also understood how much they need him, particularly with Jalen Johnson's absence. And so it's important for a player like that to know that your best is required every single day. Now, what he's put on video against the Cowboys and the Raiders is a flash. You want to try to turn a flash into a trend, you know, and that's the next step is having one good game backed up by a second good game, backed up by a third, fourth, fifth good game. And so that's a challenge on Monday night against an offense that's got the ability to test you, both with the pass and obviously with the league's best rushing offense. And so not sure yet what Terry McLaurin's status will be, if he'll be back in the mix. It seems like it's trending in that direction, but the Bears are going to have to figure some things out defensively to keep themselves in this football game. And Tyreek's going to be a part of that, obviously, on the outside.
So Dan, great storylines, terrific drama. It is going to be prime time, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, and yet, really, it's going to be a very simple football equation. You've got the best rushing team in the NFL in terms of average per carry, average per game against a 31st ranked run defense. How do the Bears get better at stopping the run, and how can they win unless they do that?
Are they 31st? Did they climb back up to 31st? Because I think at last check they were 32nd.
They're 31st. The Dolphins are last.
Okay. Yeah. So look, like Ben Johnson has been pretty clear over the last week and a half that he has seen some things in the video study that lead him to believe that there are some fundamental and technique issues that need immediate improvement. It's shedding blocks. It's the ability to do that on all three levels, up front, in the middle, and with your guys on the back end. And it's the ability to tackle in space. And the Bears haven't been good enough in either of those departments in the first month of the season. They've got to get better in a hurry because, as you mentioned, this is the league's best rushing offense, a team that dedicates itself to the run. You've got Cliff Kingsbury and Anthony Lynn putting their heads together to put together an attack that can challenge you in different ways every week. And Ben's aware of that. And he's seen it up close in the playoffs last year. And there's a lot that goes into that. But I think his messaging inside the building this week is, guys, it starts with our fundamentals and technique and being able to handle basic parts of run defense before we start to get fancy and try to come up with schematic adjustments to help us out of this hole.
This segment with Dan Weider is brought to you by TimberTech Decking and Railing, number one in premium decking. Order free supplies at TimberTech.com. So, Dan, I'm just curious, you know, when you talk about improving your running and improving the pass, you're talking about both the offensive and defensive line, and you look at that. Yes. Maybe they can get better if personnel comes back, if personnel changes are made. Seems fairly obvious they're making personnel changes on the offensive line. Maybe not ones that they want to either, by the way. Darnell Wright wasn't ready to practice yesterday. Maybe Grady Jarrett's back. What do you have any feel for how they're going to improve on their line play here after the break?
This is fascinating when it comes to the offensive line because we're just stuck in that revolving door, and you kind of feel like Will Ferrell and Elf just spinning through that revolving door so fast and over again that you want to go out to the curb and throw up for a little while because you just don't know who's starting at what tackle position and who's going to be there from week to week. You know, look, like this is a success story for Theo Benedet if he's going to remain your starter at left tackle going forward, but it's not exactly what the ideal world was when you walked into the offseason. And so you've got to find ways to bring that front five together. We don't know what's going to happen on the right side of the line. As you mentioned, Darnell Wright's elbow injury, still a factor. And so you're just shuffling, and the shuffling is disconcerting for an offense that's trying to find itself. We've talked about the struggles stopping the run. They've had struggles getting the run going on offense as well, and that's got to become a major priority quickly. Otherwise, your offense is completely limited on what it can do. Defensive line wise, I don't know if Austin Booker's return in the next month gives you much in terms of stopping the run or even a little extra in the pass rush. But you're going to have to figure that out up front as well, because 2-2 is fine for now, but it's not going to be fine to just hang around 500 for the next 3 or 4 years. And so you better start to find things that can be engines for your success.
Colson Loveland spoke yesterday. I think they've missed him in the passing game, or certainly he has not gotten involved as much as we might have expected. Cole Kmet coming off maybe his worst game as a Bear. The tight end position needs to be more productive. What do you expect from Loveland?
Yeah, I want to see if he is as healthy as he professed to be yesterday. You know, is the movement there? Is the ability to become a weapon in the passing game there? He had a big catch in that Dallas game and then was hurt for the rest of the day, and so missed out on an opportunity on a day where passes were flying for big gains everywhere to be part of that party. And so you want to get him part of that party as soon as possible. You know, the quarterback's got a lot of mouths to feed, the play caller's got a lot of mouths to feed, and he needs to be one of those mouths, because you drafted him with a top 10 pick to make an impact. And so this would be a nice moment to do it on a primetime stage.
So the Bears have, like, what, one win coming off the bye since, like...
In my time, I think, on the beat,
I mean, it's just crazy how bad they've been coming off the bye. But at least Ben Johnson, the last 2 years, they came off the bye in Detroit mm-hmm. and scored 40 points.
Yeah.
What's more likely, 40-point production at Washington or bad Bears off the bye?
You're asking the wrong guy. I mean, I'm scarred by years and years of bad performances off the bye, so that's sort of the expectation here. But you mentioned Ben's success, and I'm curious. We get to visit with him again today, later this morning, and I'm curious to know whether he feels like there is a little bit of a formula for using the bye to stimulate and catalyze some success. And so it'll be interesting to hear kind of his philosophy on getting that done. He shared a lot yesterday on some of the things he thought he learned about his offense. And you want to use what was a very ugly win in Las Vegas for momentum, right? Like you got to be truth tellers, as they said they were going to be, but you also don't apologize for walking out of there with a W. And so you use the belief and the momentum of that victory to calm guys down and get them focused on what needs to be worked on. And then you go to work trying to get yourself better. And I really do think that getting that run game going is really, really critical, because that's going to then unlock elements of the play action game that haven't been able to splash yet here in the early season. And we'll see what kind of answers they have for us on Monday night.
Did I see Jake Moody quoted yesterday? And what does that mean for Cairo Santos? I know you would be greatly concerned if Cairo Santos can't go.
Well, look, like he came out of Vegas with a little bit of a quadriceps issue. We did not see him on the practice field during the portion that was open to us on Tuesday. And wouldn't it be so Bears to start to get themselves in a groove and then have some kicker uncertainty to kind of add a little bit of stress and tension, and particularly with a kicker who's got like a really you know, a recognizable name, but not a real recognizable track record in terms of his success in the NFL. And so I certainly wouldn't feel great going to Northwest Stadium on Monday night with a kicker who's trying to rediscover himself after being, launched, to put it kindly, in San Francisco just a month ago.
I wonder, it's just a fact of reality that the two quarterbacks in this game were taken 1-2 in the draft, and the Bears, set their sights on Caleb and went and got him, and they didn't bother worrying about Jaden Daniels. Does that motivate him? Is that a bigger deal from his side? Does Caleb care about, whether his Heisman was better than Jaden's Heisman? I don't know. How does he, or does he even bother with those kind of comparisons?
Look, he'll say it doesn't factor into his mindset? I'm sure there's a little bit of it. Of you know, you're not only trying to become one of the best in your draft class, you're trying to become one of the best in the league. And to do so, you've got to outperform some of these other guys. Even though it's never head-to-head, you have to put your signature on games. And this is a potential signature moment for the Bears, given all we talked about last year, about the quarterback matchup, about everything that comes with this. This is an opportunity on a brightly lit stage to tell people that you're a different football team and your direction is different. And Caleb's a huge, huge part of that. I think one of the things that is completely forgotten about that disaster in Washington last year is that the offense was miserable for
right
three
to
quarters.
The end. Yes.
I think they had 90 yards in the first half of that game, and they were shut out, and they were lucky that the defense kept them in that football game and weren't blown out by the middle of the third quarter. And then Caleb found it, as he does in those sort of game on the line drives late in the game, and was able to show you that part of his skill set, which showed up again in Vegas a couple weeks ago. And it's honestly fascinating to me how a guy who can be really bad in some games for three plus quarters can then lock in when the game's on the line and give you what you need. But like, you have to get off to a better start. And so that's going to be a big deal, because that was one of the most undercovered parts of that loss last year, was how miserable the offense was. And Tyrique Stevenson and the Hail Mary and Matt Eberflus's decision on that final drive kind of superseded it all. But that needs to be in the focus this week as well.
Quickly before I let you go, Dan, Kyler Gordon, as much as Dennis Allen talks about his versatility, will we see him line up anywhere but the nickelback role?
I would hope so, honestly, David, because this is what was kind of advertised when we were in the offseason, and Dennis Allen's imagination was running wild about sliding him outside at times, putting him in the safety position, blitzing him, finding different ways to use him as a chess piece. And so I would hope that they don't sort of slow play that. Let's see what Kyler Gordon brings to the table. Let's see what Dennis Allen's vision is for him, and let's see if that can stimulate a defense that could use some help.
Great stuff, Dan. Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys. Enjoy the week.
Have a good one, Dan.
That is Dan Wiederer.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.